Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio. It's the 10th of November 2018. I'm taking my constitutional. Today I'm going to add an episode to the series on songs of no and yes. As I've explained in previous podcasts in this series, Songs of No and Yes is a slim volume of didactic poems that I concocted 12 years ago. For people who'd asked me to train them to become yoga teachers. It's quite a kind of quixotic project, I think. But nevertheless, I took it on and it's been very enriching for me, certainly, over the years. Anyway, here's the next one. It's called Experience. Why do you sit with folded legs, straight back and closed eyes when all you want is to confirm what you already believe? Why don't you open yourself to discovery instead? You can only speculate what the universe is like, because you cannot be outside of the universe and so cannot see it whole. You don't know what the soul is like because it is the soul which sees and is not the seeing. Just as easy see your own eyeball. Still less do you know what God is like because there is no place to stand from which to survey all of her limbs. So why not stay with your experience? Don't you find it lovable and fascinating? Why trust some book rather than what is before you now, when its author cannot know, what you cannot know, what cannot be known? What's going on here? This song is a plea for the primacy of experience over and against metaphysical stories which have been bought off the shelf and subscribed to for a whole variety of psychological reasons. The first part alludes to the way in which we want our fondest prejudices confirmed. And I would say this is usually because our fondest prejudices give us a simulation of security, psychological security particularly. There's nothing more uncomfortable than knowing that you don't know, perhaps, for a lot of people. Particularly for not having a grasp of the immensity of finding oneself alive and all the conundrums that that throws up. And we spoke about this before many times, that there is a tendency to seek a transcendent guarantee for the answers we give ourselves to all the big questions. What happens to us when we die? What's right, what's wrong, what should we do, where are we going, what's the purpose of our existence, where did we come from, and so on. And as we know, religions and certain philosophies do this job. They purport to give these overarching answers to all these questions, usually by reference to a single guarantee or transcendent signifier, like God or history, capital H, or even emptiness and nothingness. The problem with those big stories I've elucidated elsewhere, and they aren't resistant to even a moderate scepticism, which in turn gives rise to the suspicion that there's something psychological going on, some comfort seeking, some opium of the masses type scenario. And religious practices very often serve to confirm prejudices like that. They can even be set up and manipulated to confirm prejudices of that type. Or you know, and this applies across the board to various styles of prayer, congregational, mass hysteria, chanting, hymn singing. Then there's a whole science of conversion, really, which does this thing of giving experiences which confirm our fond wish fulfillment fantasies. And this is a situation which can be exploited for money, for influence, for political power. And I think much of what's going on with the evangelical right in the US can be described under this kind of rubric. So similarly, sitting meditation, you know, sitting meditation can quite easily just confirm you in your fondly held beliefs, and can act as a kind of sticking plaster over the scepticism against which your beliefs wouldn't really have much resistance. And I'm saying, why don't you open yourself to discovery instead? And this points to a thing that, again, that I keep saying, is that spiritual practices fall into two types. There's those which are concerned with exploration, finding out for yourself, discovery maybe, with a bit of luck and a following wind, maybe you do discover something. But exploration, investigation, inquiry, over and against spiritualities of cultivation, in which one tries to make oneself as a character and as a personality conform with a desideratum that's been bought off the shelf and which has been determined by one of the grand narratives or big stories or metaphysical stories that I've just been alluding to. Oh dear, it's raining. So I then go on in the poem to really underscore the plight of an ego which has undertaken to give some kind of spiritual practice, some sitting practice, a shot. Remember, it's always an ego that kind of gets involved in these dramas. This is definitely a song of no. It negates all the exits that one might take from the sheer desperation of the nothingness of sitting into realms of self-calming and comforting, metaphysical speculation and so on. And this is how I put it. You can only speculate what the universe is like because you cannot be outside the universe, so you cannot see it all. And I'm saying there is no Olympian perspective on the whole for an ego. Anything standing outside the whole ruptures the whole, or the wholeness of the whole. If there's something standing outside the whole capable of observing it in its entirety, that whole is not whole because there's something outside it. The whole has got no outside. So that whole kind of quest for an Olympian perspective, and there is often a claim by meditators that they do in fact inhabit an Olympian perspective, but really what they're doing when they make that claim, such people, is parroting the scriptures, you know, and so they're comforting in themselves with the notion that there's something inside a book somewhere that answers all the awkward questions and that you can use to calm yourself. I mean, in the same vein, you don't know what the soul is like because it is the soul which sees and not the seen. Again, this is like trying to see your own eyeball. Okay, we have devices like mirrors and so on. And also we have transcendental deductions that enable us to reconstruct views of ourselves and views of the universe. But they're not kind of direct seeing. And they contain many possibilities for deception and self-deception within them, rather obviously. Still, lest you know what God is like, because there is no place to stand from which you can survey all of her limbs. And people are always telling us what God thinks and what God does and what God is like. But actually, the problem of seeing God in order to be able to pontificate about God is as impossible as the project of trying to see the universe whole and occupy an Olympian perspective. So there's a kind of a cutting off there in that passage of a negation of exits into second-hand thought, speculation, and so forth. And it's because of this trickiness with the received wisdom and the second-hand thoughts and solutions and answers to our questions that conventionally we might well try to avail ourselves of when we encounter the starkness of sitting, that I make the following recommendation. So why not stay with your experience? Don't you find it lovable and fascinating? Well, that's it. This is what drives us back to experience. In the great story of Western philosophy, this is what caused the arising of phenomenology, a return to the things themselves, as Husserl put it. And it's this same territory that Buddha is alluding to when he's sort of deriding our speculations. And when the Zen masters listen patiently to our complex thoughts and then tell us that it's makya, bullshit. So why not stay with your experience? Why not just stay with it? Isn't it fascinating? Isn't it glorious? Stay with it, enjoy it, worship it if you want to, but be with it. I mean, better still, I would say, and this is me, be with it until you are into it. And it's that point where this ego drama, and we can only have an ego drama when we first come to sit in to meditation, because it's something that we do, it's a decision we make, it's a curiosity that we indulge qua ego, as egos. And then again, some more negation for your delight follows. Why trust some book rather than what is before you now, when its author cannot know what you cannot know, what cannot be known? So again, there's this negation. This is a song of no. So that the whole song is a plea for recognition of the reality and the value of the ineffable. It doesn't try to F the ineffable. It just exhorts you to encounter it and be with it. And reading between the lines, to be into it, ultimately. And it's pointing in the direction of the ineffable without, of course, saying what it is, which, of course... you do at your peril. This is not to say that we don't have a go. We kind of do, because we're stupid. But really, the ineffable can't be effed. And our task in talking about it is to point out either it exists and B, in which direction it lies. We can be thrown into poeticisation by an encounter with the ineffable. It should make you sing, it should make you dance, that kind of encounter, and give rise to an artistic expression of human being in all its glory and energy. That's fine, but it's when we start saying, it's like this, it's like this, it's definitely like this, and if you don't agree with me, I'm going to kill you. And turning the whole thing into metaphysics and therefore into politics. With somewhat nefarious results. So guys, stay with your experience. That's where it's at when it comes to sitting. So I'm going to give it another read, which is going to be my custom. Here we go. Experience. Why do you sit with folded legs, straight back and closed eyes, when all you want is to confirm what you already believe? Why don't you open yourself to discovery instead? You can only speculate what the universe is like, because you cannot be outside the universe, and so cannot see it whole. You do not know what the soul is like, because it is the soul which sees, and is not the seen. Just as easy see your own eyeball. Still less do you know what God is like, because there is no place to stand from which you can survey all of her limbs. So why not stay with your experience? Don't you find it lovable and fascinating? Why trust some book rather than what is before you now, when its author cannot know what you cannot know, what cannot be known?